Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited for the episode that we have planned today. We have the wonderful Katie Bingner here with us today. She is a clinical provider as well as an interpersonal coach. Katie, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Brooke.
I'm so excited to talk to Katie because she brought up an extremely important topic, and that is the breakdown of interpersonal communication that we are seeing with all of the various online forms, particularly within our university years. But before we dive into that, Katie, can you just let us know a little bit about yourself? Give your origin story, if you will, and how you got into this interpersonal realm.
Absolutely. So I've been doing my clinical work for almost 10 years now, and I've been coaching for about two, although to be honest, there's a lot of coaching that happens in counseling.
So she has a lot more practice than 2 years, seeing a lot of interpersonal communication issues.
Well, simply that 2 years ago, I realized how much I feel so passionately about helping people specifically focus on that coaching element of how to communicate more effectively. It's something that constantly shows up in the counseling work. And so for those particularly who don't want to do counseling or don't feel ready to jump into counseling, I wanted to offer another space to feel safe, to learn, to improve their lives, to improve their relationships without having to go into those deep wells of our past and still be able to improve your life. So that's kind of how that came to be.
I love that. And when we think of the university years, those are so hard to begin with. There are so many transitions and challenges. And then we have to think about all of the new people and new relationships that we're forming.
Absolutely. There's so much that kind of comes at you so quickly. Ton of change.
Absolutely. So in terms of interpersonal communication, let's just start with that as a broad and then we'll go a little more niche. What does that look like in the digital age?
What I like to kind of teach on from the beginning with people is that we have a tendency to have these default communication styles. And the default communication styles I see as, kind of simply put, the things that we picked up, the ways we were cultured to communicate, the ways our family communicated, and then also now we're playing into the fact that we're being raised with technology now. And so this plays a really key piece of how we default in terms of our communication strategies. And when face-to-face connections and communications reduce, or even if we're having maybe what we would think of as the same amount of face-to-face communication, what certainly dramatically increases is our online communication, right? And so we're having far more non-face-to-face communications that are lacking the nonverbal communication, the paraverbal communication. And that plays a big role, I think, in how, particularly how I think young adults navigate conflict, try to communicate authentically and cope with kind of the emotional overwhelm that can come with being honest, looking someone face to face and saying, hey, I'm not feeling it anymore. And that's hard to do. That's really hard to do. You know, sometimes we default to a more passive communication style in person, but because we don't have the pressure, and i.e. the kind of internal triggering that can happen when we're face to face, if we have social anxiety, being in proximity to someone can make us shut down. Whereas without that pressure, without that kind of anxiety triggered, maybe we can be more bubbly, more outgoing, more honest, more extroverted, more silly, more humorous. So I really think that it winds up being this totally different avenue where we can potentially express elements of our personality that we wouldn't, or we can even wind up developing parts of a personality that we may not have ever been too familiar with at this point in our lives. Because if we have social anxiety and we tend to be more passive and we only had that to experience, then we may not have been able to explore how silly, ridiculous, sarcastic we could be via text.
I think we see that with meme creation. And that leads us down an interesting sort of rabbit hole that you brought up, and I find it fascinating. When you're behind a screen, it is so much easier to do some of these. They're often romantic, but can be platonic behaviors like ghosting, like breadcrumbing. Let's get into those.
Yes, let's.
So as far as ghosting, for those of you that don't know, of course, it's when you gradually, or it can be more sudden, stop communication with someone. And it's obviously most common romantically, but again, it can happen platonically. Why are we seeing this increased prevalence in ghosting? And additionally, why are people so scared of it?
I get why people are scared of it. It hurts, right? Ghosting elicits oftentimes a very significant feeling of rejection. I think understandably so, something that none of us want to walk into feeling if we can help it. But there's a lot of reasons why someone ghosts. And as I've kind of dove into that more and more of trying to understand where that comes from, it's really nuanced, as we are, because we're complex creatures. We have a tendency to want to oversimplify and kind of just call all ghosters narcissists. But that's really not the case. In fact, I feel comfortable saying that statistically, it is unlikely that you're dealing with someone from the more what they call kind of dark triad traits of narcissists or Machiavellianism or psychopathy.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because we're overusing the term narcissist, and that's a very dangerous thing. Somebody can have a narcissistic trait or an overdeveloped narcissistic trait, and they're not a narcissist by definition.
Right, exactly. Essentially, by definition, pathologically, we're talking about a very small amount of the population and really extreme behaviors, you know, around either very low or no capacity for empathy. We're talking about people who are driven to have and hold power over others, tendencies toward intense self-promotion, emotional coldness, duplicitousness, aggression, kind of all coming together with really bad intent, right? And so it's a lot less likely that that's what you are coming up against. But what I'll say is that for those that do fall into that smaller population, strategies like ghosting and breadcrumbing are commonly used. So these are things to keep in mind.
Absolutely. Breadcrumbing. Let's dive into that one. That one's a little less common.
It's interesting because I think it's common. But I think that it is, because it's more dragged out, there isn't kind of an event, one event we can point to and say, they just stopped. The communication, right? Ghosting is just this unilateral decision by one person to disappear, usually with absolutely no indication that that's going to happen. So there's like this event we can point to and say, ghosted, ghoster, I was ghosted, right? But with breadcrumbing, it's this drawn out, longer experience of really intermittent, sporadic, superficial communications, right? People maybe communicating with you via text or on social media, but like not being available or willing to call you or meet up in person, right? People who might make vague plans and then kind of just totally bail on them or forget that they even were made. The communication is, again, it lacks depth. It lacks vulnerability. It's often one-sided. You don't really know that much about the other person typically. There's just this really clear imbalance that one person is making more effort. One person is kind of going that extra distance to try and make the communication and the connection more meaningful than the other person. And to be honest, a lot of times breadcrumbing is kind of a little bit more duplicitous. It is kind of that behavior that's like, there's some intentionality usually behind breadcrumbing where it's like, I want you to keep close. You know, I want to keep you hanging on, but I really don't have an intention to make this a committed or meaningful relationship. I just kind of want you hanging around. There is a difference there. And with ghosting, I think that there can be a lot more complexity around it.
I would agree with you. And breadcrumbing is a lot less identifiable. And I think it's why we're not hearing about it on social media. And you and I already said this, social media can be so dangerous. It can be so dangerous for the way that we perceive other people, for the terms that we're using, for the language that we're using. And it's really important to, for example, listen to someone like Katie that really knows the professional terminology and language.
Yeah, we want to be sourcing our content, our information from reliable sources. And also, never hurts to fact check, right? It never hurts to say, I learned this thing on this podcast. Let me look into that a little bit more. Let me learn a little bit more about it. There's actually some really interesting research that's been done over the past handful of years around ghosting and breadcrumbing. So there's actual scientific studies and data out there that is adding to our understanding of these types of behaviors.
Speaking of types of behaviors, is there another one that you feel is prevalent that we haven't discussed yet?
We can talk about the ick.
Ooh, I want to talk about the ick. Let's go there.
The ick. I love it. So I'm going to be totally transparent. You know, I've been married for a while. And so I've been out of the dating scene for a while. And my friend brought this up, who's in the dating scene. My friend brought this up around like, can you talk about the ick more? And I was like, I know kind of generally what that is, but let me dive in myself and really get a better understanding of this kind of phenomena, which is not new, right? There's this, the ick is kind of like, you know, when we're attracted to someone, and again, it's usually in the context of a romantic relationship, but not always. It could be just like a drive to want to be someone's friend or whatever. It can be platonic, but then that person does something or maybe reveals a characteristic or trait that elicits a visceral reaction of kind of disgust. We have kind of usurped this word ick, and I love it. I think it's a great, effective way to kind of express that phenomena of what happens when something goes on. It's a lot less prefrontal cortex, it's a lot less cognitive process, and it's a lot more like gut reaction, which oftentimes defaults us to kind of trust it more, right? It's kind of like our gut is telling us, ew, and we should probably listen to it. But just like with everything else, it's a pretty nuanced experience. There's different reasons why we get the ick towards somebody, and it warrants, I think, oftentimes further investigation.
It absolutely does. And it could be something particularly for you that doesn't make sense, but could make sense for somebody else. With young adults, dating is such a big part of the college experience or the university experience. Why are they particularly at risk for these sort of behaviors and things to happen?
At this point, right, this transitional phase of our lives, we are not only in like the depths of identity development, right? We're really taking that next big, probably biggest step toward figuring out who the hell we are outside of our, right, our family unit, outside of our community that we were raised in, or maybe the religious environment that we were raised with, or, you know, our peer dynamics that we got used to, where we're finding a sense of self. We're developing a concept of self. And we are creatures that want to connect. A part of how we develop our sense of self is by connecting to different types of people and getting a sense of like, who are we attracted to? Again, not necessarily just romantically, but who are the friends that we really want to be surrounded by? Who are the people that interest us and leave us feeling intrigued and excited and passionate and supported and loved? and safe. And this plays a big role in our social connections. And so we're out there and we're seeking that sense of meaningful connection. There's also an epidemic of loneliness happening in our society. We are more lonely than we've ever been, statistically speaking. And so we're also trying to counteract that. We're trying to meet this need internally that says, hey, we want to be around people. We want to have connections. We want to feel intimacy. And also, that's really scary to do. So there's like this internal push and pull. There's anxiety a lot of the times around social interaction, and also a very strong internal drive to seek it out. We can kind of get spun around in that washing machine of wanting to go and then regretting going.
Right. 5 minutes before, you're like, I really, really don't want to go.
Just like that phenomenon of this week, I'm committing to all the things. Next week, I will cancel them all.
And I'll lay in bed the whole week. And that becomes it's a cycle. Even I've done it. I think we've all done it.
Yeah. It's a very common phenomenon. And it's keeping us really stuck in our anxiety. It's keeping us really stuck in our loneliness. It's leading to the development of depression and anxiety disorders, right? Like the level of anxiety that really interferes with our ability to function. And overall life satisfaction is starting to really reduce around this sense of why can't I? We start pointing the finger at ourselves. We get caught up.
What's wrong with me? What does it mean about me? If two people have ghosted me, does it mean that I'm the problem?
Right. Exactly. And that's an understandable reaction in terms of you're not getting any information elsewhere, right? You've been ghosted. There's we kind of consider it like the person who holds all the power, all the answers, won't give us any. And so we can feel very stuck and very hopeless in that space of never knowing what it was we did and what it was that was wrong with us that wouldn't allow for this relationship to move forward and for it to become meaningful.
And it's so easy to make up stories. I'm not enough. And I think that the online dating scene really contributes to story creation. I'm not enough. I'm not getting swiped on because of this attribute, because of this reason. What's your opinion on online dating as a whole?
Online dating is hard. It requires vulnerability in a landscape where no one is really willing to be vulnerable.
No, and everyone seems so perfect and so lovely.
Well, that's the other piece of the narrative, right? Is we're forming these really false, inaccurate narratives around the idealization of what we're seeing, right? The storylines, the images that we see that we then, because we're not out there having our own interactions and experiences to actually be able to develop that, again, that sense of identity, that sense of, okay, I know that relationships, like you can post all the wonderful things you want. And great, if that's true, awesome. There are also downs. But if we don't have anything to pull or enough substantial experience to pull from to be able to counterbalance all the inundated idealistic fantasies that are being, we're flooded with content. I don't know any other word that I would want to use to kind of describe our nervous system is flooded with this very one-sided, very inaccurate view of relationships and connection. And so it leaves us really confused. It leaves us feeling really disheartened. It leaves us feeling like we want answers. That is the way we're wired, is to create. We're storytellers, right? That's how we make sense, right? That's how we make sense of the world and our lives. And so we are going to create stories one way or the other. And we're going to use the content that we've been exposed to create those stories. And if we don't have things to counterbalance all that flood of curated content, the narrative is going to be everyone else seems so happy. Everyone else has their stuff together. What is wrong with me?
I've read some great research that said that online dating, particularly dating apps, is a little bit like ordering at a restaurant, because if you like, for example, a curly haired brunette, or if you like a specific height or a specific eye color, you can go find more. And that false fantasy, that false reality is so dangerous.
It really dehumanizes the process, doesn't it? We're looking at a menu of items to select, kind of like what you're saying with this analogy of how it's like ordering at a menu at a restaurant. And I think that that plays a really significant role on not just how we approach dating online, but the impact it has on our mental and emotional well-being. And then we start to adapt to it, right? And rather than kind of saying, you know what, this is not where I'm going to do it. This is not where it's going to happen for me. I'm going to take a class. I'm going to start going to, you know, frequented areas and just, I'm going to go hiking. I'm going to meet people. I'm going to whatever. Rather than that, we just have a tendency to adapt. And that's where I think communication breakdown starts to really get problematic, is that we just start to say, okay, well, this is how people communicate.
Right. And I think it decreases creativity, because I'm only going to look for this sort of person and never open my mind to the possibility that my wonderful partner could be something that's not that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're right. There is a real degradation of the process of finding meaningful connection. And what's so interesting, like going back to talking about the ick for a second, and how we can find someone that we are, you know, in all other senses, like, this seems good, this seems decent. But because they have like really chapped lips, you know, we just can't, it's like we decide we can't. And there really warrants more investigation, because instead of just being like, you know what, like you said, like there's a bunch of others out there, I'm going to throw this one back, does not prompt us to pause and say, or I could get curious about this, what otherwise seems like a really great match. I'm enjoying the connection, but this one thing is enough to be a deal breaker, is it? Is it?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because it perpetuates the fallacy that there's always more. If you could give three pieces of advice, they could be anything, but I'd love them to be a little bit communication-centric, to a university student, what would those three pieces of advice be? And it's so hard, because there's so much you want to say.
Try to get curious. You're at a phase in your life where you're inundated with all the stuff, the pressures, the social and peer interactions, trying to figure out who you are, what you want to do, who you're going to be, etc. And you can get swept up very quickly in that rushing tide. And without a sense of curiosity, you can kind of just roll around in that, you know, in that water for a long time, just going wherever the flow takes you. And when we stop and we get curious, that is really when we start to understand a little bit more. We start to understand ourselves more, and we start to understand some of the dynamics that are occurring in our relationships more. And not only does that help us cope with those dynamics better, but it helps us find some clarity around what we want to do about them. So get curious. That would be my first piece of advice. I would also encourage you to, and I guess this kind of is along the same thread, but it's very specific. And that is in all the work that I do, no matter what, one of the first things that I offer people is space and time and information and exercises to narrow down their personal values.
Because if you don't know those, that is so scary.
It kind of leaves you out there again, just flipping and tossing and turning, mercy at the mercy of the tide. And you want to start narrowing down what matters to you, what brings meaning to you, to your life. What are the ways you want to show up in your relationships? And essentially what I do is I help people develop what I call a compass of values that may or may not give you all the outcomes that you want, but it helps you navigate through them. And that is invaluable, because we're not always going to get the outcomes that we want. We know that logically. If I had to just pick one more, I think I would say reach out. Reach out when you need some help doing any of that or anything else. It's this idea that I think, again, young adults in particular are sent messages in our culture that suggest that, okay, well, now you're on your own. You've got to figure out sink or swim. There's a lot of this pull yourself up and figure it out. When we zoom out and we look at the broader way that we operate as a culture, I think it speaks volumes to the impact that that has when we feel like we are just kind of pushed out and left to fend for ourselves and really looked down on or judged. If we say, I don't know, I need help, then there's some real implications for how that impacts us. And so I just would want to encourage you again, whether it doesn't have to be a therapist, it can be, it doesn't have to be. It can be finding a mentor. It can be connecting with, again, like a group or engaging in a hobby that allows you to connect with people that you feel safe and comfortable to share with and to process things with and to get perspective from. It could be connecting with a coach, right? Where it's like you're really looking to specifically improve on these one particular areas that you're just feeling clueless or really afraid to navigate on your own. But the thing is, I think that we all find success by the connections that we make, right? When as the older that you get and the more you look back and you think, the points of my success in life were not done completely by myself, usually. We were taught things, we were guided, we were supported, we were shown care and patience, and we built and we evolved really valuable traits and skills from that help. And so just don't be afraid to reach out and get support, connection, because that is going to help you move through whatever it is that you're navigating right now and in 5 years and in 10 years and in 20 years.
And just keep doing it. Oh my goodness, I could not love your three tips more. They're so thoughtful. And I resonate with every single one of the three. I have another question for you. It's going to be a little hard off the top of your head. Is there a particular mantra or quote or words that you feel really passionate about in your own life?
There's kind of a few that I hold really dear that have helped me significantly. One, and I guess I would probably mark this as probably top, is to slow down and go easy. The pace of our world, the way we are wired to adapt to that pacing is to go incredibly fast, to ignore our internal cues, and to listen to the outside world to tell us what to do and how to do it. And when we slow down and we just give ourselves some grace, we are able to connect and to listen. And the truth is, I believe, that we are our best guide ultimately. We are the only one that will ever live in our skin. And while we can use the outside resources to help us navigate, we never want to lose touch with that internal connection. We never want to lose touch with, you know, what our instinct is telling us. Again, going back to the ick, right? Talking about a gut reaction. Yes, typically, culturally, we're taught, well, our gut reactions are honest, they're fact, they're true, listen to them. That's not always the case. Anxiety shows up in the gut, doesn't it? And we know that there's a lot of times when our anxiety is kind of false alarming on us. It's telling us we're in danger when we're not. And not always. There's time. And that's what makes it really confusing. And so this idea that the more we attune inward, the more familiar we get with the cues and the more we explore it, it helps us with that kind of first tip or suggestion that I offered, which it helps us get curious. But we got to slow down to do it. We got to slow down and notice.
Yes, we do. You're teaching me so much. I am loving this episode. As we wrap up, Katie, how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about you, if they want to find you?
So you can connect with me in a number of different ways. My website, katiebingner.com, has essentially any info around what I do, what I offer, my services, a little bit more about me and my background, but also how to get in touch with me. It's got all my socials on there as well. But I'm on Instagram at Katie, the letter B, coaching. I'm on TikTok at unfiltered_therapy.
Now you're brave. You're on TikTok.
I love short form video content. A little bit about me background wise is that the first thing I ever wanted to be was an actor. And so it kind of speaks to me, little videos, it speaks to me. But I also offer a free Facebook group. It's called Communication Skills for Connection. And that is where I allow members. And it's, again, it's free. And so you can just agree to the group rules and get in there and get access to a bunch of the different resources, downloadable resources. But I also do a regular communication lab where I let the group pick a topic around communication that I then do a live lab to kind of address that topic and answer any questions that people have. So it's all about just helping people.
That is so creative.
Thanks. It's all about education and support around realizing that, to be totally honest, majority of us need to learn how to communicate effectively. Those default communication styles aren't always the most effective. They can be problematic at times. And so good communication really is a skill, and it really is the key to meaningful connection. And so that's the idea there is join, you get a ton of free information and things to consider for how to become a better communicator in your life.
I am so grateful that you shared your time with us to discuss a topic that's a little intimidating. Ghosting's tough. It's hard to talk about. And I really, really appreciate all of the insight that you shared and all the energy you brought.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.